Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From today's Arizona Republic, Dreaming of Spring? Start a Garden Journal by Mary Janik. As one gardening season winds down, it's time to begin planning the next. A garden journal is a useful tool to organize planning, keep track of chores and supplies, celebrate successes, and make note of mistakes. Think of it as a garden diary to jog your memory when life gets busy and it's hard to remember where you put your keys, let alone what you planted where last year. To get started on a garden journal, think about what would be helpful to remember for that season. The following are some common categories. First, a garden layout map. The map should show all your raised beds, containers, and in-ground areas with plenty of space to write in the crops for the season. You could sketch out a template of your garden or use free online garden planning tools. Keep a copy of the blank design map to plan use in the future. The garden map makes it easier to develop and keep track of beneficial planting strategies like companion planting combinations. It also guides planting by grouping plants that will benefit from frost cloth in cool weather or shade cloth in the summer. Planning your layout ahead of time and having a completed map makes quick work of placing transplants and direct sowing when the time comes. Crop rotation schedule. Keep a copy of each season's map and make note of what was ultimately planted in each bed along with good options for following seasons. For example, avoid planting nematode-prone crops in the same location year after year, or planting certain crops that don't do well after others, like tiny carrot seeds after sweet potatoes, which can interfere with germination. Seed inventory and log. Keep a list of your seeds, including the source, in case you want to use them again. A seed starting log can track when seeds were started, germinated, potted up, and transplanted. Include reference information that lists crops with their preferred temperature ranges. Along with information on average temperatures for your area, you can plan when to direct sow or start seeds indoors to time them with the most hospitable outdoor temperatures. Keep the completed log to guide the following year's crops. Gardening supplies and sources. Knowing what you have on hand helps you remember to use it, maximizing the value of those purchases, and avoiding unnecessary duplication. Important dates. Include things like first and last frost, noteworthy weather events such as tropical storms or the occasional snowstorm, periods of extended rain or drought, and garden tasks. Brief notes about weather conditions, planting, harvesting, and similar observations can provide valuable guidance for future seed starting, transplanting, irrigation use, and use of frost or shade cloth. If you don't have a blank calendar available, check out sites that have free calendar templates. Gardening techniques. Jot down details of new techniques and outcomes to replicate successes and avoid failures. Soil test results. Having these handy will help plan soil amendments like compost, soil acidifiers, or lime, and monitor progress in building your soil's fertility. Fertilizer applications. A fertilizing schedule can be a good reminder for when the garden is ready for more. Record what fertilizer was used, the amount, and the outcome. Pests and pest control. Record when pests were found in the garden and how your interventions worked. This may help you get a jump on anticipating the arrival of pests like squash vine borers next year. Season summaries. The end of each season is a good time to pause and reflect on successes and failures. Make note of what did well and is worth repeating, as well as the duds. Pockets or large envelopes. These can be used to save seed packets, plant tags, receipts for returns, and similar items. Photographs. Include photos of your produce or the lushness of the garden itself to celebrate the fruits of your labor. They can motivate you when hard work in the garden awaits. Art. Just for fun, include gardening doodles or paintings to add a little levity or pizzazz. Formats for garden journals. After deciding what information would be useful to include in your journal, you're ready to select the best format. Fortunately, there's a type of garden journal to meet every preference. You can shop for a ready-made garden journal from bookstores, mass merchandisers, seed and garden supply companies, and big box stores. Some are practical versions that are waterproof and spiral bound, while others are of keepsake quality. For example, an online search returns results ranging from a downloadable planner for 99 cents to a personalized wooden covered journal for about $40. Gardening blogger Christina Hicks Hamlin has written about different approaches to garden journaling in an article on the Gardener's Path website, where she shares personal practices and examples from a variety of journal styles, including photos of sample pages. Like most things, there are computer apps available to help manage gardening chores. Some apps offer planting calendars based on USDA hardiness zones, track daily and weekly tasks, and allow gardeners to document progress throughout the season. Many also include educational videos and online communities where gardeners can share experiences. Of course, an empty notebook or three-ring binder can easily be tailored to individual needs and preferences for a do-it-yourself garden journal. Published garden journals and online videos can also provide ideas and inspiration for setting up a system that works best for you. Like gardening itself, keeping a journal takes time and effort, but it may also save time, effort, and expense next season. It may even keep you from repeating those gardening blunders you swear you'll remember not to do next year. It can't help find your keys, though. Also from today's Arizona Republic, three things to know about maintaining garden tools by Paul Capiello. Holding a quality tool in your hands and putting it to proper use in the garden is a subtle but magical part of the practice of gardening. Putting that same tool to use after you've spent an inordinate amount of time sharpening, oiling, and generally fussing over it makes the experience even better. Doesn't a freshly washed and waxed car always just seem to run better? It's the same with gardening tools. All too often, gardening tools are those things that get bought at the bargain basement big box store for far too little cash, get abused in the garden, and then summarily thrown in the corner of the garage, covered with drying mud, nicked from clanging off rocks, and totally devoid of any potential to muster up any kind of magical feeling at all. While some social media hucksters might try to convince you otherwise, you don't need a whole lot in the garden tool bag. Just a few high-quality tools, well-maintained, can last any gardener a lifetime. Here are three gardening tools to use and how to maintain them. Garden spade. Many people make the mistake of confusing a spade with a shovel. A shovel, that long-handled thing with the rounded-off point, is great for scooping sand into sandbags if you happen to live on the Gulf Coast and are preparing for a hurricane. A proper garden spade has a short, sturdy shaft, a D-shaped handle, and a squared-off blade. A spade is not designed for scooping. It is designed for efficient cutting, cutting through soil and through roots. Spades are excellent for edging beds, much better than those silly bed edgers that unnecessarily take up room in the tool shed. But as primarily cutting instruments, garden spades need to have an effective edge. Trying to divide perennials or transplant a shrub with a dull spade is a bit like trying to slice a tomato with a turnip. Start with a quality spade, something with a sturdy feeling blade that doesn't feel like it will flex or bend under load. To sharpen by hand, secure the spade in a vise or have someone hold it in place for you while you draw a large, flat file across the inside of the spade edge. The goal is to create about a 30-degree angle on the inside of the blade, leave the back of the blade flat. An old, overly abused spade might require a dozen or so strokes with the file. Once sharp, a quick dress-up of the edge might only take a couple of strokes. Either way, be sure to wear a good pair of work gloves. You'll be surprised how efficient a dressed spade edge is at slicing through finger flesh. I could show you a few scars as proof. If you prefer the power option over the file approach, a bench grinder or a benchtop belt sander can do the trick as well. Pruning shears. A quality pair of pruning shears should always be at your side or within reach when working in the garden. Whether you are clipping a few flowers to bring inside, tweaking a hedge line, or trimming a broken branch on your favorite tree, pruning shears are about as versatile a tool as you could want. The best pruners are equipped with bypass blades that cut with a scissor motion. Cheaper pruners use a blade and anvil, essentially one sharp blade that mashes the branch against a flat surface. Bypass pruners do a much better job in just about every case and are easier on your hands compared to the anvil type. Pruner blades need to be kept sharp, just like a spade. And like spade sharpening, bypass pruners are only sharpened on one side. The side of the blade that slides along its counterpart needs to be completely flat in order to create a smooth cut. Only the outside edge of the pruner blade gets a bevel. The easiest way to sharpen pruner blades is to use a small sharpening rod, steel or ceramic, or a small diamond paddle sharpener. And as with spade sharpening, an old and much abused blade might take a few minutes to bring to an edge, while a well-cared-for blade might just need a few strokes from time to time. I rarely sharpen mine more than once a year. As for sharpening angle, just mirror the factory set angle when you dress the pruner's edge. Other than sharpening, a good cleaning and oiling can make all the difference. Nothing is as frustrating as a pair of pruners that stick and don't move freely. Folding saw. Fixed blade saws used to be the norm, but sharpening saw blades is generally beyond most homeowner gardeners. I've tried, trust me on this one, and finding a professional these days is almost impossible. Fortunately, modern folding saws have been a great advancement in the garden. Most brands have razor-sharp blades that can speed through everything from just too big for your pruners to a 6-inch diameter tree limb. And the great thing is, the blades are replaceable. No sharpening needed. My current version has had the same blade for the last 3 years, so they don't have to be replaced all that often in the home gardening arena. With sharpened spade in my hand, fussed over pruners in my left back pocket, and trusting folding saw in my right, there's not much I can't tackle in the garden. Now here are some upcoming goings-on at Desert Botanical Garden, the Central Arizona Cactus and Succulent Society Annual Show and Sale 2026, March 27th through 29th, Friday and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Sunday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., price included with membership or general admission. The event showcases CACSS 50-plus year collaborative relationship with Desert Botanical Garden. Dorrance Hall will contain a display of over 400 fantastic plants, demonstrating the talent and ability of club members to raise and cultivate cactus and other succulents to their highest level. Plant experts will be available to answer visitors' questions about the plants on display. Visitors may purchase similar plants from more than 20 vendors in an outside shaded sales area adjacent to Dorrance Hall. Select a special plant and unique pottery to start your own cactus collection. Plants can also be potted for free for instant gratification at the potting station. All major credit cards are accepted for purchases, no cash transactions. This event is open to the public and is free with paid admission to the garden and society members. Be sure to visit the Central Arizona Cactus and Succulent Society's website for more information on the show and the sale. And the Spring Plant Sale, March 12th through the 15th, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., last admission at 2 p.m., free admission, reservations required. Celebrate 50 years of planting together. Join us for the 50th Anniversary Spring Plant Sale, a golden milestone with an extensive selection of desert plants, including cactus, agaves, succulents, trees, and shrubs. Garden horticulturalists will provide advice and help you select the best plants for your home garden. March 12th, Members Day, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., with last entry at 2 p.m. March 13th through the 15th, General Public, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., last entry at 2 p.m. Plan your plant sale shopping with a handy guide filled with a site map, inspirational tips, and a plant sale overview. Patron Circle Fall Plant Sale Preview and Picnic. Want to be the first to shop the sale? Increase your support or donate at the Patron Circle level for exclusive access to the Patron Circle Spring Plant Sale Preview and Picnic. Enjoy early shopping at a relaxed setting while connecting with fellow Patron Circle donors and discovering your perfect desert plants alongside a food truck picnic and hosted bar. Donors must register in advance to attend this event. Learn more about the Patron Circle community or contact Stephanie Wilson at 480-481-8160 or patroncircle@dbg.org for more information. Finally, the Majestic Mariposas, February 28th through May 10th, time 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., included in membership or general admission. Celebrate the arrival of spring at the Cohen Family Butterfly Pavilion, where hundreds of colorful southwestern butterflies fill the air with life. Watch the monarchs and other stunning species dance from flower to flower and discover their incredible life cycle up close. Snap a photo by our vibrant butterfly mural or simply pause and experience the serene world of pollinators around you. Desert Botanical Garden is located at 1201 North Galvin Parkway in Phoenix. And if you have questions, you can email contact@dbg.org or visit the admissions box office from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. From the February-March issue of Phoenix Home and Garden Magazine, A Passion for Vines. Bold blooms, vigorous vines, and surprising resilience. These passion flower hybrids bring exotic beauty to low desert gardens. Snow Queen Passion Vine. This is a climbing vine. Grows summer through fall, and the color is white. 10 to 20 feet high by 2 to 4 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil. Grows in zones 8 to 11. Full to partial sun, medium water, medium maintenance, and attracts butterflies. With a parentage that includes P. caerulea, Snow Queen features a pure white flower with a hint of green along the petal margins. This award-winning hybrid was developed in the UK in 2017 and arrived in the US a few years later. In the low desert, it performs best when afternoon shade is provided during the hottest part of the summer. Its occasional fruits are not palatable. Why we like it? The ornamental flowers of Snow Queen are long-lasting and fragrant. This vigorous climber thrives when supported by a trellis, fence, or arbor and requires minimal pruning. Nancy Garrison Passion Vine. This is a climbing vine. Color is white and purple, spring through fall. Grows 10 to 20 feet high by 4 to 8 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil. Grows in zones 9 through 11. Full to partial sun, medium water, medium maintenance, and attracts bees and butterflies. A cultivar of P. edulis, Nancy Garrison puts on a spectacular nectar-rich flower show of purple and white blooms. It's also self-fertilizing and produces edible fruit that ripens in late summer and early fall. It performs best with afternoon shade and consistent moisture in the low desert. Why we like it? This is a good choice for gardeners who enjoy plants that produce fruit as well as flowers. Fruit can be eaten fresh or used as a sweet and tart flavoring for drinks, jellies, and desserts. This plant requires support in the form of a trellis, arbor, or fence. Under ideal conditions, it may flower and fruit virtually year-round. Lavender Lady Passion Vine. This is also a climbing vine. Color is purple, spring through fall. 10 to 30 feet high by 4 to 6 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil. Grows zones 9 to 11. Needs full to partial sun, medium water, medium maintenance, and attracts butterflies. Prized for its abundance of ornate lavender purple flowers and deep blue-green foliage, Lavender Lady is heat-tolerant and does best in the low desert, protected from summer sun with regular watering. This variety may produce fruit, but they are hollow and inedible. Why we like it? This vigorous climber is an excellent choice for arbors, trellises, and walls, making a lush backdrop for gardens in many styles. As with other passion vines, most well-drained soil types are sufficient. Non-fruiting varieties can also be grown in containers of at least 15 to 20 gallons in size, as long as the pot includes a trellis. Finally, the Lady Margaret Passion Vine. This is also a climbing vine. Color is red summer through fall, 6 to 30 feet high by 4 to 6 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil. Grows zones 9 to 11. Full to partial sun, medium water, medium maintenance, attracts butterflies and hummingbirds. A hybrid of P. coccinea and P. incarnata, Lady Margaret features large raspberry red flowers with white centers and is thought to be one of the most forgiving options for low desert gardens due to its heat tolerance. To protect the roots, plant in a shady area where the vine's tips can reach the sun. Why we like it? Lady Margaret is a favorite of butterflies and is even known as a larval host for the Gulf fritillary butterfly. Grown for its showy blooms rather than for fruit, this plant can also do well in large containers with trellises, making it ideal for patio gardens as well as the more typical arbors, walls, and pergolas. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. In this book, one of many in the Chicken Soup series, this one devoted entirely to the subject of gardening. There's so many great stories in it, and this one is called God's Mountain Garden. It was written by Bertha M. Sutliff, and there's a quote here, a Chinese proverb. Keep a green tree in your heart, and perhaps the singing bird will come. God's Mountain Garden. I grew up on a farm in the mountains of northwest Arkansas. As children, my brother and I roamed every inch of the little mountain facing my parents' house. We knew where every giant boulder and animal burrow was on that little piece of mountain bordering my dad's farm. One day my grandpa came to visit from his home several miles away. We sat on the front porch swing looking at the mountain, and he began to tell me a story. It was a delightful tale about him and me living in a little cabin on the mountain. "Can you see it?" he asked. "It's right there by that big acorn tree. You see it?" Well, of course I saw it. What 8-year-old child wouldn't see what her imagination wanted her to see? "We're going to live in that cabin. We'll catch a wild cow for our milk and pick wild strawberries for our supper," Grandpa continued. "I bet the squirrels will bring us nuts to eat. We'll search the bushes for wild chickens and turkeys. The chickens will give us eggs, and we'll cook us a turkey over the big old fireplace. Yep, we'll do that someday." From that day on, every time I saw my grandpa, I asked when we would go to live in that little log cabin on the mountain. Then he'd once more spin the story of how the two of us would live in the cabin with the wild flowers and wild animals around us. Time raced on, I grew into my teens, and gradually forgot Grandpa's story. After graduating high school, I still saw Grandpa and loved him dearly, but not like that little girl did. I grew out of the fantasy of the log cabin and wild cows. Before long, I married and set up my own house. One day, the phone rang. When I heard my daddy's sorrowful voice, I knew my grandpa had left us. He had been in his garden behind his house and died there, his heart forever stopped. I grieved alongside my mother for my dear grandpa, remembering his promises of the cabin in the woods with all its animals and flowers. It seemed I could once again hear his voice telling me the fantasy we shared. I felt my childhood memories being buried with him. Less than a year later, I went to visit my parents' farm. Mama and I sat on the front porch, admiring the green foliage of the mountain. It had been 10 months since Grandpa had passed away, but the longing to hear his voice one more time was still fresh in my soul. I told Mama about the story Grandpa had always told me of the cabin in the woods, the wild cow, the chickens, and turkey. "Mama," I said after I'd finished my story, "would you mind if I went for a walk by myself?" "Of course not," was her reply. I changed into old jeans and put on my walking shoes. Mama cautioned me to be careful and went on with her chores. The walk was invigorating. Spring had come to the country and everything was getting green. Little Johnny jump-ups were springing up all over the pastures. New calves were following their mamas, begging for milk. At the foot of the mountain, I stopped. "Where did Grandpa say that acorn tree was?" "Straight up from the house," I thought I heard him say. I began my journey up the little mountain. It was steeper than I remembered, and I was out of shape. I trudged on, determined to find that tree. Suddenly, the ground leveled out. I was amazed to see what was before me. Soft green moss covered a small, flat clearing. Dogwood trees, smothered in pastel bloom, surrounded it. Off to the side stood a tall oak tree, Grandpa's acorn tree. Scattered among the tufts of moss were vibrant colors of wildwood violets. Green rock ferns and pearly snowdrops were scattered about as well. I could hardly catch my breath. I don't know how long I stood there, several minutes, I suppose. Finally, I came to my senses and sat down on the moss. In all my childhood wanderings on the mountain, I'd never seen this magically beautiful place. Was this what Grandpa meant when he pointed out our special spot on the mountainside all those years ago? Did he know this was here? A squirrel darted in front of me. He had a nut in his mouth. I watched as he scampered up the oak tree. No, I didn't see a wild cow or chickens, but in my heart I knew they were there somewhere. I decided to go tell Mama what I'd found. She would want to see it too. Before I left, I took one more look. It was the most beautiful place I could have ever imagined. It didn't take me as long to get back to the house. I burst into the kitchen, babbling about the clearing on the side of the mountain. Mama calmed me down enough so she could understand what I was talking about. Daddy heard the conversation and tried to convince me that there was no such place up there. He knew the mountain and had never seen anything like that. On my insistence, he and Mama decided to go see the amazing place I was raving about. Once again, I climbed the mountain straight up from the house. Before I knew it, we were at the top. "We must have missed it," I told my dad. He just nodded and we retraced our steps. We searched for over an hour for that little place on the mountain. We never found it. I was devastated. On the way back home, Mama put her arms around my shoulders. "Sissy," she said, "you know what you saw, don't you?" "Yeah, I know what I saw, and I know it's there somewhere. We must have missed it." "No, sweetie, it's not there anymore. You saw God's garden. Only special people can see that. Your grandpa loved you so much, and he knew you were grieving inside. Hold that memory in your heart." I'm 52 years old now, and every time I go back to Mama's house and sit on the porch, I remember the secret garden Grandpa told me about. But I no longer go out and look for it. No, I know just where it is. That's called God's Mountain Garden, written by Bertha M. Sutliff, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.